What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, good morning, and welcome to the Carson Anderson program. Thanks to the morning show for fine work every day. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Doug.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Feeling good today?
Yeah. You know.
Mid?
I don't know. I wouldn't say good. I wouldn't say bad.
No?
Yeah, just getting the day started. We'll see how things go.
Yeah? You have high hopes for the day?
I always have high hopes for the day.
Do you?
Yes.
New day. You never know what's going to go down.
That's right.
Yep.
Every day is a new day.
This could be the day.
Today could be the day.
Today could be the day.
For whatever you want it to be.
For whatever you want it to be. Today could be the day. I guess we got snow on the way.
Well, it was, I heard some freezing rain for periods this morning when I was at the house getting ready. And then that just turned over to rain. And then it stopped when I came in. But
worst of the worst, freezing rain.
Yeah, freezing rain's no good. But fortunately, the temperature was well above 32, so it wasn't presenting an issue.
Yeah.
But you don't want that to become an issue.
No, you don't. No, you don't. So, Gator household, Tuesday night. Exciting, fast-paced single life.
Well, it wasn't crime fighting last night.
No crime fighting?
No. I'm reluctant to say. So watch the Red Wings, obviously, and that was no good.
Lethargic. Yeah. Very predictable.
But sometimes...
Uh-oh, is this what did they make you flip to?
Well, it's not necessarily that. It's something came on, and I'm like, oh, and it's right at the beginning, and I don't know. I had recently thought of this movie the other night, and then here sure enough, it comes out, and I'm like, oh, boy. And then I said to myself, well, I have to watch the beginning and find out why.
What? Find out.
Because when I saw this movie in a theater, this is embarrassing to say.
I can't wait. I love public embarrassment, especially yours.
When I saw this movie in a theater back in 2008,
mm-hmm.
within 5 minutes of the movie.
5 minutes of it starting.
Yes.
The first 5 minutes of the movie.
I was an emotional wreck.
Oh, really?
It hit me so hard, and I'm not sure why. And I don't know why I was thinking about this literally like 3 days ago. I'm like, why did I get
so this? Something happened in the first 5 minutes of this movie.
Yeah, and I don't know what. It was just ruined. And so I'm like, okay, well, here it is. 17, 18 years later now, let's go ahead and try to watch. And I've seen bits and pieces of this movie during the duration in between. And every time I watch it, I do get emotional watching it. I'm like, why? And so I'm watching again last night. And yeah, early on, again, boom. And I'm like, there's nothing like really major that should. And then I'm thinking back to my life in 2008. Was there something going on in my life personally where... maybe something in a movie struck me and it just got me. And I still can't really figure it out. And I had the same reaction. And then I kept going back to the movie and I'm like, oh my God. And I'm just a wreck for over
first
2 hours.
5 minutes.
Yeah.
So.
And it's going to sound, when I say the movie.
And you said it's 18 years old. So yeah. It's not Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru getting smoked in Star Wars at the beginning of Star Wars.
Wow.
It's not that, huh?
Spoiler alert. No, it was not that.
What is it? What is it? Jor-El and Superman?
Wow.
When they send their kid off, it's not that?
It's not a science fiction movie.
Okay.
Although it has an incredibly interesting concept of the movie, but it's not, you know, it's definitely not a science fiction
movie. First 5 minutes, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, do you think I've seen this movie?
No, I don't think you've seen this movie, and I would recommend it because I think it's a great movie.
All right, let's go. Let's embarrass yourself publicly. First 5 minutes of what movie?
The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Yeah, I didn't see this movie. So what happens in the first 5 minutes?
I mean, the movie sets up, there's a whole motif about time moving backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that there's this big clock that's built in New Orleans back in like after World War One, and the guy had lost his son. The guy who built the clock was blind, and he was a famous clockmaker, and he had lost his son in the war. So when they unveil the clock's going backwards. Everybody's like, whoa, it's backwards. And he's like, yes, I designed it that way because, you know, we want to go back in time to a time where blank didn't happen. This didn't happen. This didn't happen. He goes, and I would still have my son back. So already it's like, okay. And then it's also at the same time, it's going back and forth to like modern time. And the backdrop of the current part of the movie is Hurricane Katrina. So that's a whole other thing with the tragedy with that. So, and then there's, and the woman who's telling the story of her life is dealing with cancer. So it's like all these things are going on. It's just a storm, a perfect storm of emotional distress. And then the movie starts, and I think it's a really interesting concept in a movie.
So you were an emotional wreck.
I was an emotional wreck.
First 5 minutes.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Do you know what the concept of the movie is?
No.
It's about being born as like an elderly man and going back through time, and your life is getting younger.
You're getting younger.
So he's a baby, but he looks like he's an old man. And he's dropped off at like an orphanage. Not even an orphanage. It's like an old folks house. Hmm. Old folks home.
Hmm.
It's really, I think it's a wildly interesting concept to see what life is
backwards. Yeah. You know, it's funny because you mentioned at different stages in your life, how things, like mm-hmm. what was going on in your life
What happened in 2008?
I'll never forget when I went from being, when my wife and I were married, we had our first child, and I was trying to rock him to sleep, and there was a movie on, and he was, you know, I'm sitting there with my baby boy, and I'm watching Mr. Holland's Opus, yeah. which I had seen before. And you get to the scene where he puts together music for his deaf son, but he does it with light and, you know, beats, so the deaf people could feel the beats and see the lights as they coordinated to try and
Cole, I believe.
Yes, and he starts singing. Then he signs the song "Beautiful Boy." I start bawling. I like start crying. I had seen the movie before. That scene didn't touch me at all. But in that point of my life, as a parent, all of a sudden I am crying uncontrollably, and I'm going, I'm literally going, where is this coming from? But it's funny because it's whatever stage you are in your life. Like, I don't think, you know, when I'm just kind of getting going into the college life and I see Bachelor Party and I'm like, yeah. Now I see Bachelor Party and I'm like kind of detached from it. But when you're when you're 20 and you see Bachelor Party, you're like, let's roll.
Yeah.
Hangover, probably a little bit more. Then. Yeah, I wasn't at that age. I guess Hangover still did appeal to me, but probably not quite the same as when you're just getting set to go off. Yeah, but no. Okay, so case of Benjamin Button.
Destroyed for over 2 hours.
Were you?
Yeah.
So you watched a movie. The Red Wings were so bad, I kept flipping back.
But I absolutely, the majority of the time was watching the movie, which is... I don't know if it's supposed to be sad.
Kang, I mean, have you seen this movie?
Certainly are.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Is it supposed to be sad?
I mean, I wasn't crying.
There you go. Here we go.
Maybe you're a big Kate Blanchett fan. I don't know.
I do like Kate Blanchett.
Yeah, see?
But, you know, it was interesting. It's her and Brad Pitt. And then the movie afterwards was Babel, which is also her and Brad Pitt. And also a really good movie.
Man, you are a big Cate Blanchett fan.
I don't mind Cate Blanchett.
It's coming out. Yes, and we're discovering something about Gator.
You'd rather cry than watch Red Wings last night is what happened, right?
I mean, look.
Cry watching something's worth crying over, or cry watching the Red Wings not being able to score a single goal?
If you'd asked me, what are the odds of the Red Wings getting shut out the night after an emotional overtime game and with the added addition of the emotion of the Sergei Fedorov ceremony, which the players clearly got into, if you were to tell me they were going to get shut out the next night on the road at Boston, I would say, yep.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
I mean, we predicted it yesterday, and it sucked because they were in the game. It just, as the longer it went, you're like, they're going to be running on fumes by the time this thing is done. You know what they need? They need a nap. Give them a nap. Give them a good nap. No reason to freak out over that loss, but
they'll be all right.
Scheduling, there are times in the schedule you can see something coming in. That was one of them. 248-539-9797. We got open lines here on Carson Anderson as per usual.
Am I getting destroyed, King?
I mean, some people are saying you probably shouldn't share that stuff on the air. It's Metro Detroit. And now the West Side. Hello, Rockwood.
Well, everybody knows now.
Grand Don't Rapids. Worry. Hey.
Do you want to go back and retape the first segment so people don't hear it?
No, I'm okay. I'm fine with, you know, things I can admit to it. That's all right.
It's a shame, Scott.
I'm a sensitive young man.
Yes, you are.
And I'm not ashamed of it.
And you're not, you're honest. Honest with it. You're just being honest with the audience.
I'm just being honest. I'm not going to lie to the people out there. Doug. I can't do that.
It's Carson Anderson, 97.1. Turn up. Doug Carr, Scott Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket, 248-539-9797. Gator got emotional watching return of Benjamin Button.
It's the curious case of Benjamin Button.
Benjamin Button strikes back, whatever it is. And he got...
Really?
The wrath of Benjamin Button.
Full Metal Benjamin Button. Whatever it was, he watched it last night and got emotional. Did you get emotional again?
Yes.
Did you? Now I got to see the first 5 minutes of this movie.
I don't even think it's you got to watch the movie's a great movie. We watch the whole movie. And if you're not crying by the end of it, then you have no soul, like Kang.
Okay. Pete in Detroit, you're on 97.1. Hi, Pete.
Hey, how you? I'm with you, Gator. I mean, that movie hit me with the orphanage and everything, but I ugly cried to Field of Dreams.
Oh, yeah.
You know, want to play catch, Dad.
Yeah, hey, Dad, want to have a catch? It's over with, yeah.
Oh, my God. At the end of that. But the movies get me like that. I guess I'm with you. Like, I've got a son, too. Doug, and so he's 21 now, but when he was younger.
You got a really bad connection, Pete. We can barely hear you. I don't know if you have us on speaker, but yeah, movies, like, they can get you. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, Field of Dreams, at least you can feel like a man if you're crying during Field of Dreams. It's about baseball, right?
Yeah.
Benjamin Button,
movies, too. I'm trying to think, like, Contact gets me.
Contact is great. The end of the whole end of it. Don't want to ruin it for people, but yeah.
Yeah, when she's talking there. But I mean, this is what it does is like sports is like that too. You know, when I see some pumped up stuff for beginning of a game and all the hype they have, those montages, I mean, I'm like teary eyed.
The ball is tipped.
Great stuff.
There you are. You're running for your life.
Well, that's ridiculous.
You're a shooting.
Yeah, yeah. This guy cries in every
theater. We admit to this stuff. We're men. We're sensitive to the needs.
So there you go. Yeah, right. Attaboy. Step up. Thanks, Pete. Hey, everybody's got their thing. I'm seriously not making fun of you. I don't know anything about the movie. You're the one that said you were embarrassed about it.
Most normal people, if they saw the whole movie, that they would have a reaction of some kind emotionally if you watch the whole movie.
Kang, did you ever cry at a movie?
Yeah, when I was a kid. My Girl. Macaulay Culkin died. Sorry, spoiler alert.
Oh, man. Wow, just give it away.
What was that, like 30 years old?
Is that it? 40. That's all you got?
It's the one I can remember most. Is that one got me.
Why do I feel like you have a whole catalog.
Yeah, I know.
Gator. Gator, what do you mean? Do you?
No, I don't think there's a whole catalog, but I think there are movies I remember but again, like, some of them, like, I can explain, like, maybe in a time in my life where something was going on, but there are some scenes that just get...
Well, the one thing that the caller said about sports, and how like sports can, like, the montages get him, I'm going to give you one word that gets me every time.
Moist?
Load?
No, that makes me cry.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Sorry.
The word is Rinaldi.
Oh, because, Tom Rinaldi.
Tom Rinaldi on all his...
Yeah, I mean, that stuff's like, all right.
Yeah. And you know it's coming, and you're like, this is going to be emotional, and invariably somebody wasn't feeling well, and they went for a checkup, and you're like,
Who was the guy used to do the show on ESPN, had the interviews, kind of a funny-looking guy, but they used him in Jerry Maguire, at the end of Jerry Maguire.
I don't know.
When the receiver is easy. I promised I wasn't going to cry, but he always got people to cry.
Oh,
during
Roy
the interview.
Firestone.
Roy Firestone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, watching some of that stuff when they ask the personal stuff and they get into it. And it's like, you know, you see what's personal to other people. Yep. And you got a feel for them.
Yep. No, I think my cry to College Game Day ratio is about about 1 to 2. Like, I think out of every other episode of College Game Day, Rinaldi gets me. I see on Fox now. Whatever. Whatever, Pete. Whatever. Whenever Rinaldi comes on my TV, I am susceptible. 248-539-9797. All right, so after our show yesterday, there was news in the National Football League that Mike Tomlin was stepping down as a head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
Kind of caught me off guard, but it, I mean, you know, what has been well documented are his postseason failings. 7 straight postseason losses, 5 straight by double digits. So 7 in a row, but the last 5 were all by double digits. And, you know, ESPN, in their coverage of this, like, you could see they were kind of scrambling. Like, they got on the ESPN Pittsburgh reporter, and she was talking about all the things that she learned before this news came out, but it was like, no, nobody really knew. And then all of a sudden, and then they started playing phone calls from, I think the radio station is KDKA in mm-hmm. Pittsburgh. And they just played
oldest radio stations in the country.
Is it? Mm-hmm. Am I right? Is that their sports station?
It's a station there. Yeah.
They played, I think it was 3 straight callers of Steeler fans calling up, celebrating this. Like, they were ecstatic. And I'm in a such a careful what you wish for kind of place, because Tomlin makes the playoffs every year. And Ken, you brought up the point today that he's a victim of his own success, and I'm not going to steal your thunder because it was a great point.
No, I was just saying, like, there's some of those teams didn't even deserve to make the playoffs, yet somehow he was able to get them into the playoffs.
Like,
and
this one.
Yeah, exactly, and then ultimately lose, which is adds on to his losing record as in the playoffs and how many straight playoff losses they have with maybe certain teams that were never going to win a playoff game. So maybe overachieving led to people thinking he underachieved, and like you said, a victim of his own success, maybe.
Yeah,
I mean, he hosted a playoff game because you won a crappy division. Like, you weren't better than Houston. And how many wins did Houston have this year? You weren't better than them. You got to host that playoff game, and you got housed in, at home, and it sucks. Had they lost on the road, I don't know if Steeler fans would be as upset, but they're still going to be, because people, yeah. It's what have you done for me lately? And yes, 19 straight years of winning football, but only 1 Super Bowl.
Yep.
So that fans want something more. It's similar to Baltimore, right?
Yep.
John Harbaugh did a hell of a job at Baltimore. But fans want something more. And at some point in time, things get stale. Okay, it's nice to make the playoffs, but if you're making the playoffs and you have no shot of winning at all, it's like, what's the point? You know?
He said... He, I mean, his record is unbelievable. If you just look at, I'm looking at their season by season, and they have a category for what happened in the playoffs. Almost all of them are filled up because he always took teams to the playoffs.
Yeah, they were able to, I mean, what they've done in their history is amazing with the 3 head coaches and 60 years of football or whatever it is.
There's been more Popes the last 60 years than there have been Steeler coaches.
It's like 6-3, yes, or something like that. So
I love that stuff.
But they didn't do him any favors either, because we've always complimented the Steelers over the years, like they just draft really well, right? Because they're not having to go and draft the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since Ben Roethlisberger left, or when his career started to decline, they probably needed a quarterback, and they just couldn't get the guy that made sense. Whether they, I don't know if they, how many quarterbacks they've drafted in the first round. I'm guessing it's not many. And obviously that's, you know, first round quarterbacks have a much higher success rate than the non first round quarterbacks. So it's, I don't think they did him any favors by just kind of cobbling together a team that was adequate, but no chance of being great.
Well, it was funny because I heard Jeff Saturday yesterday on ESPN. He was talking about the Steelers getting bounced in the playoffs, and he made the comment that Aaron Rodgers did exactly what they asked him to do. He was an average quarterback, and that's exactly what they asked him to do. And I'm like, so the team was building around the idea that we're going to try and win with an average quarterback. I have so much respect for Mike Tomlin, but Gator, it brings us to a topic on whether or not you you out there, are you Mike Tomlin? And what I mean by that, he got hired in 2007. Who still has the same job they had in 2007? Do you have the same job right now that you had in 2007? What do you do? How do you continue to do it? Do you like it? And how much has it changed? Is anybody else, do you in your line of work have the longevity of Mike Tomlin? Gator, do you have the longevity of Mike Tomlin?
I plead the fifth. Given that we started doing this show together in January of 2007.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Are you Mike Tomlin? Do you still have the same job at 2007? How's it changed? You still like it? How you get it done? I mean, I'm intrigued by this because he's getting hailed for his longevity. How many people out there have that kind of longevity?
Well, it is also interesting for us to ask the question, being in that position,
yeah,
and how much change we've seen, dude, over the last 18, 19 years.
Yeah. We've this business has changed a lot.
A lot.
Yep. I don't know how much we've changed. At the beginning, we were forced. Yeah. At the beginning, we were forced to change by Bigby. If you ever heard us tell stories about Bigby, who was running the station for a while, he came in, ruled with an iron fist. We battled him every day after the show, and eventually we just capitulated, and quite frankly, the ratings went up.
Well, the show
we did it his
the
way.
The show has definitely changed.
Yeah. But we're intrigued to know if you are Mike Tomlin. It is Carson Anderson on 97.1.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back. We're better. Let's get it.
Doug Carr, Scott Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket. Are you Mike Tomlin? Have you had the same job since 2007 and you still like it? How's it changed? How have you gotten it done for so long? It is, it's kind of hard to imagine how long he's been in the game. And that is a game where people do not last. I've been at the post office since 2004. I love it. I drive around all day putting paper in a box, listening to music, podcasts, and The Ticket. That is from Sean, the mailman.
Well, thank you, Sean.
Hello, Sean. I've been at my job for 29 and a half years. I started in 1996. By the way, Gator, I'm 59 years old, in case you wanted to know. That's from Brad in a car.
It's always relevant.
Not the same job, but crazy that he's been coaching the Steelers since my sophomore year in high school. I'm 34 years old. My wife is a nurse at the same hospital for 36 years. That's from John in a truck. Wow. Are you Tomlin? 248-539-9797. John, you're on 97.1. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you today?
What's up?
So, yeah, I have had the exact same job. I work for a major motorcycle manufacturer, and I'm the one that sells all the bikes to the dealers.
And you,
so has it? Go ahead.
I'm sorry. You said you've been doing it for how long?
Since June of 07.
Okay, so you're right along that timeline. How has it changed?
It used to just be about selling some motorcycles, and now it's about every other ticky-tacky thing that revolves around the industry. I still love it because I am an enthusiast and I love jet skis and motorcycles and everything I sell, but it is morphed you know, the technology's changed a ton. I mean, for one, right now I'm listening to you on Odyssey doing my job up in Ludington.
There you go.
So, nice. I mean, before I would never, and I never even thought about using Odyssey until I didn't want to miss draft, the NFL draft. So, same thing happens at work. You know, you just learn to adapt and keep on keeping on.
Yeah, and you say it now, it's all about all the ticky-tack little stuff, huh?
Well, yeah, like I said, it used to just be about selling motorcycles, and now it's about, you know, extended service contracts and the time that, you know, it takes dealers to respond to a email lead and just everything that used to never exist and to me is still mildly irrelevant.
Yeah, interesting. John, thank you for sharing and enjoy Ludington. Scott is next. Hi, Scott.
Hi, I'm an automotive engineer. I work for a supplier that makes parts. My job is to basically, I've been 34 years doing the same job for engine parts, transmission parts. And how the job has changed is 10 years ago, now we've got electric vehicles. There's no engine, there's no transmission. Now what do we work on? So that was a big change in what we had to do. So kept doing the job because the technology changes. So different parts that we're working on, different technology there, and then just the shift and change in you know, the automobiles and how they're put together. So it's kept it interesting for us.
So you're saying that all the changes are what makes it actually more doable for you?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because it's not the same old, same old. Yeah.
Yeah, there's evolution of the products, evolution of the process, evolution of the overall industry and how things are done.
Interesting. Yeah, cool. Thank you for sharing, Scott. 248-539-9797. Are you Mike Tomlin? What do we mean by that? You've had the same job since 2007. You still like it. How does it change? How has it changed? Et cetera, et cetera. It's incredible longevity in the NFL and a ton of respect from afar, respect from afar for what that guy accomplished. Feedback coming in. There's a reason fans in Pittsburgh are celebrating while us in Detroit are questioning this whole situation. Fans in Pittsburgh actually have an expectation for their team while us here haven't had a sniff of that level of success. So we don't have any expectations. I don't know that that's completely true. Look, I've gotten to the point where I've been around. When you have a one-and-done postseasons are unforgiving. One-and-done postseasons introduce a greater element of randomness. When you get into postseasons where there's seven-game series, that feels to me like a greater measurement of who is the better team. One-and-done in any sport, I feel like the goal should be to get yourself in the mix to win it all. Because in a one-and-done postseason, anything really can happen. And I think Tomlin has been a little bit of a victim of that. And as Kang said, he's taken non-playoff worthy teams to the playoffs. His ability to get just consistently win and have a winning record gets him to the postseason. And then, you know, they get there, and because he got there, there's an expectation, and they don't live up to it because he overachieved in the regular season, et cetera, et cetera. But hey, look, my expectation for the Lions is I want them to be in the Super Bowl mix every year. I want to feel like they have a chance to win it all. And not, you know, hey, if these 35 things go right, they could win it all. But like, they're talked about as one of the legitimate contenders by everybody. And they have been the last few years. And that's been nice. Now, eventually, I guess, and the idea being, if you are in the mix long enough, you're gonna mess around and win one. But I think that's what I consider a realistic expectation for your team.
I think that just getting in the NFL, I think that's fine for teams that are struggling. You know, hey, you finally get into the playoffs, that gives you hope, then you can build off of that. But if you're not making real changes and you're not really improving, and that team is like stagnant at, you know, now that we have a 17-game schedule, it's a 9-8 team or a 10-6 team, but you know, there's nothing really going on there other than you're good enough to make the playoffs, but there's no way you're going to advance. I can see why things go awry and like what happened in Pittsburgh, where Tomlin might want to step down. And you know what? He's tired of it. He's tired of hearing his name being on the hot seat or whatever, and just move away from it. And it sounds like he wants to step down and not take a head coaching job this cycle, and you know, sit on the sidelines and do TV or whatever and for a year at least, and then maybe get back into it, or he doesn't have to. I mean, he's had a hell of an NFL career as a coach, one of the greatest of all time because of that consistency. I mean, think about that. 19 straight years where you've had a winning record, that's insane. In yeah. the NFL, all the changeover you've got, you know, with salary caps and everything else and injuries, and they've just endured it all, and it's really been impressive. But in the end, if your team was built just to get into the playoffs, that's not good enough. You have to take another step to it. And I understand why this has happened there. And I get why some Steeler fans might be celebrating, might be a little much. I would celebrate the career that Mike Tomlin had, and I would be excited about the future because change is always kind of exciting. You may not love it, but it's exciting and it's exhilarating to go through a change and to see, okay, how are we going to be different this next time around? And you know, with the Lions, kind of bring it back here, it's different because the Lions were in a trajectory going up and up and up and up. And then this year, boom, legs cut out from underneath you. You don't make the playoffs. And we're like, whoa, what happened here? And now that it's obvious the team has to make these moves to become better so you don't get stale, you don't get stagnant, you don't just become good enough to make the playoffs, you have to be good enough to win a Super Bowl.
248-539-9797, Mike in Shelby Township, you're next. Hi, Mike.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
What's up?
So I'm 57 right now, and I started with a landscape company when I was 14, and I currently own it now. So, yeah, 43 years at the same place.
How much has it changed?
Well, you know, I've seen guys come and go. I don't know, probably 300-400 fellow workers, equipment. You know, when we first started out, equipment-wise, you didn't have Bobcats and things like that back then. I would say probably mostly, you know, equipment, way employees are treated now. Just generally, how the industry's just gotten better over the years. And now, you know, now in these more affluent suburbs, you see, you know, a lot of people going to landscape companies. And it just, you know, changed overall from top to bottom.
And you still like it?
When I was 14. Oh, yeah, I love it. Yeah, I love it. People in this industry are great people. Down-to-earth people, and that's why I'm still in it.
Hey, appreciate the phone call, Mike. Good luck to you. 248-539-9797. Are you Mike Tomlin? Coming up today at 10:50, something happened last night. We always talk about the guardrails of reality, trying to keep this talk show on the reality highway and not crash through those guardrails. I think we're going to test the guardrails today with something that we need to talk about. It might be getting pushed here a little bit, but it's time to start talking about whether or not Detroit can do this. We will get to that today.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. 2 new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
At 10:50 on Carson Anderson on 97.1. Kind of a predictable loss for the Red Wings last night. Michigan State was in a dogfight with Indiana. Jeremy Fears kept him in it, and then the Spartans took over late to run away and hide from a good Indiana team. That's a good win. For MSU's playing very well right now. We got Michigan basketball tonight on the road at Washington, a 10:40 tip Those are always awesome in the middle of the week. And how many people stay up for that one? Gator, look, we try to be realistic here as best we can, and we don't always accomplish that. But I think something that needs to get talked about is what happened last night in Milwaukee. And it's not really the first time we have seen, and there's been some expression from Giannis Antetokounmpo that he is not happy. But the Bucks got booed at halftime. And in the second half, he gets the basketball on the baseline, drives to the hoop, makes a bucket, gets fouled, falls on his butt. And there's a baseline camera that zooms in on him. And you can hear him crystal clear start yelling boo back to the fans and gives them the double thumbs down. And then after the game said some things about basically, if you're not with me, I'm against you. You know, is there accessibility to Giannis Antetokounmpo? Is it gotten to the point in Milwaukee that a player of that caliber can get traded? And again, I don't know if this is realistic talk. If I'm in Milwaukee, if I'm doing this talk show in Milwaukee, it's probably not something I'm even considering unless somebody moves the sun and the moon to get him. And it kind of like we talk about with Scooble. And so when you start getting into those kinds of talks, then you question, all right, should Detroit be involved here? Are you ready to move said sun and moon to go get Giannis and pair him essentially with Cade to try and make a run at the NBA championship this year?
I think the moment you have heat with the fans,
yeah,
and there's no like mea culpa involved, I think it becomes an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Like if a player in Detroit said this, I play basketball for my teammates. I play basketball for myself and my family. When people don't believe in me, I don't tend to be with them. I tend to do what I'm here to do, what I'm good at. It won't change home or away, but yeah, I've never been part of something like that before, and I don't think it's fair. I don't. But everybody has their opinion to do what they want to do. I'm not going to tell them what to do or how they should act when we don't play hard or when we lose games or when we're not where we're supposed to be. I don't think anybody has the right to tell me how I should act on a basketball court after I've been here 13 years and I'm basically the all-time leader in everything. Giannis is an amazing player,
mm-hmm.
one of the best players we've ever seen. But when you start to bark back at the fans a little bit, the relationship gets fractured, and I think it's the writing's on the wall that you're going to have to go. Because if you don't, I mean, not acknowledging the fans is kind of a thing, right? I think you kind of have to, even if you're just playing the game, put a brave face forward and say, yeah, it's too bad. I hate to let the fans down. Fans will love you for it, right?
Yep.
But when you say something like what he said, it can be construed as selfish and whatever. Although it may be factual, people don't want to hear that. People didn't want to hear that Prince Fielder had more to think about than just baseball, right?
No.
And they were done with him. Like, he's got to go. And whether it's right or wrong, it's just what happens. Should the Pistons get involved? I think the Pistons should always have a plan to improve their team, and they would have to think to themselves, okay, how far would we be willing to go to get Giannis Antetokounmpo? And it's not easy because you'd have to part with a lot. There's hurt to it. You can't just, you know, make this trade. I don't think we're going to see another Luka Doncic trade.
You don't expect somebody to do something that is widely considered as being moronic.
Right.
Huh.
Even if you're guaranteed to have the top pick in the draft. Yeah, I think it's going to have to work. It'd be a really difficult trade to pull off, and yet there'd be a bunch of teams lined up trying to make it happen, and then you're going to find out what, in fact, his worth is on the open market. Can the Pistons match something that makes sense, that doesn't hurt them too much, that actually, when it's all said and done, that it's a net win to have Cade and Giannis play together, although it may cost you Jalen Duren, Jaden Ivey, and first-round picks, and Ron Holland or whatever. I mean, because that's what you have to look at.
Because if you think about this, if we are doing the show in Milwaukee and we're having a legitimate talk about trading the all-time franchise player who's still averaging nearly 30 a game and he's under contract for the next couple of years, what are we asking for? We're not get him out of town no matter what.
Right.
We're not, oh, let's just go get some draft picks and build for the future. Right? We need to have our doors kind of blown off. And so do the conversations, I mean, Tobias is included because of his contract and to a degree position redundancy if you get Giannis. Now you got to sweeten the pot. And like, so are we talking, would Ivy, Holland, and two first-round picks get it done? I don't know that it does.
That doesn't. I can't imagine
that. What about Asar Thompson?
If you throw Asar with Holland and Ivy and draft pick capital, I think it gets a conversation going. But if I'm Milwaukee, I'm saying it starts with Durin and Ivy and one of your two young guys, Thompson or Holland, and then first-round picks.
Would you rather spend the money on Giannis or Durin? I mean, Durin's not going to get a Giannis-type contract. But,
no, but Durin has an – obviously, there's a tremendous impact that Durin has on this team. But is he Giannis? No, he's not. Of course he's not Giannis. But
– if you get rid of Asar, Tobias, Durin, and Holland or Ivy, you are cutting out three starters. You're cutting out, like, the future. Like some critical parts of the future.
But you would have two superstars.
And you would have two superstars and you'd have pieces, right? You would hang on to Holland or Ivy, but you probably then.
We're seeing a lot of Sasser and Dennis Jenkins.
Yeah, you're bumping. I mean, if you're Sar, Tobias, and Durin are gone
Tola
in a trade like this, you got Cade, you got Duncan Robinson, you got Ron Holland at the three, you got. Beef Stew and Giannis as your bigs, and I mean that's a good team, but it feels like a complete revamp.
Well, it's like a different team,
a totally different team than what they have right now. And you know, I don't know. It feels to me like it's so extreme that it would be a complete reset as to what this team is and what they might be. And there's no saying that it would work. I don't know if I want to take this chance to uproot so much of the core to get Giannis. As great a player as he is. Am I crazy here? First of all, I want you to sound off on this. I mean, are we going too far?
I think when a name like Giannis Antetokounmpo becomes possibly available, you always got to look at it. If the Pistons were bad, you do everything in your power to make this trade. The problem is, not a problem really, but they're good. They're number one seed in the East, and you're upsetting the entire apple cart here if you do something like this. Like trading a guy like Durin and Asar Thompson or Holland, those are culture fit guys. Those are core young guys that helped build this team to where they are right now. It sounds crazy. I don't think I would do it, but because... They're good. It's not like they're bad and need this full reset. They're actually good, so you don't need to do this.
To win close to 60 games.
But the name and the player is so damn good. It's intriguing. You have to look at it. And I look at it, now that I look at it, I probably wouldn't do it, and it would take a ton. I mean, you might be looking at four first unprotected picks, including the young guys that we mentioned. And then if you trade like Tobias Harris and Jalen Durin, you have no one on your front court.
Right.
And Giannis can do only so much, but Durin's a big body in the middle that's playing like an all-star this year. And that's a big part of the reason why they're in first.
Yeah. Teams are willing to part with first-round picks if they're good teams because those are picks in the mid to late 20s.
Yeah, you're going for it.
Okay, whatever. You know, you're not drafting an impact player typically at 27 in the draft. You can get one, but it's not typical that it happens. So that's what you're willing to give up the draft capital, but you can only do it. You know, you have to, because the way the NBA rules are set up, it's like every other year you're giving up that pick.
What they're doing right now is working, right? It is working.
Yes.
And it's got a present and it's got a future. To put together a realistic trade to get Giannis, who it might be a situation where he's got to move out of Milwaukee. You have to reinvent who you are now and sacrifice the future. Is that something you would want to do? 248-539-9797. It's Carson Anderson here on a Wednesday on 97.1.
It's Draymond Green, kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.